Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
We've been listening from Tahrir Square live at various points during the morning here on The Takeaway to the voices of, you might call them 200,000 or more, Thomas Jeffersons screaming for democracy on the streets of Cairo. Here's the voice of, more of a John Dickinson. Listen to Omar Khalifa speaking on our program yesterday.
You can't just democracy without people being prepared for it. Is Egypt prepared for democracy like the one you have in the U.S. or in other European countries? Definitely not.
How do you get prepared for democracy and who gets to decide? It's a very old debate, comes straight out of the Federalist Papers or even before. And here to talk about it is Pauline Mayer, the William R. Kennan Jr. Professor of American History at MIT, author of Ratification, The People Debate the Constitution, 1787 to 1788. Welcome back, Professor Mayer.
Thank you.
And Al Steppen joins us, director of the Center for the Study of Democracy, Toleration, and Religion at Columbia University, specializes in democratic transition in the modern era. He's the author of the book Crafting State Nations. Professor, good morning to you.
Good morning.
So, Pauline, how reminiscent are these notions of are we ready or are we not ready for democracy that you're hearing in the streets of Cairo, obviously in a different language and a different time, but still, are they reminiscent of what you've studied in U.S. history?
Dramatically different. Of course, the American Revolution, there were 11 years of development, which begin with a whole series of local popular governments that successively take over authority and then yield to governments based on elected legislatures. There's no infrastructure like that in Egypt.
And so, Al Steppen, is the U.S. model basically an argument in Hosni Mubarak's favor? We got to go slow here. I'm not stepping down. It's chaos without me.
We don't have to use the U.S. model. Many of those countries in 1989, they were post-communist countries, communist countries. They had not had this preparation. Eight of them are now members of the European Union. So, ideally, it takes a long time, obviously, but many cases that I've studied happen fairly quickly. But what they're absolutely right, over half of the cases of transition attempts that I've looked at have failed. But this is you can do some things, and you have to do some things right now. So Mubarak is absolutely wrong that he needs to stay on so there's not chaos. The longer he stays on, the more there'll be chaos.
It's Professor Al Steppen from Columbia University. We're also talking with Pauline Mayer, professor of history at MIT. Pauline Mayer, then, there's a sort of psychological question. Our friend Omar Khalifa, he feels like Egypt is not ready, but is there any sort of political infrastructure sort of threshold that would suggest a nation is ready? And is Egypt there, in your view, Pauline Mayer?
Well, I think Al's parallel with 1989 is exactly correct. I mean, people that didn't have a substantial democratic infrastructure that basically thrust off the old regime and in many cases have been successfully able to establish democratic governments. But what seems to me what is fascinating with the Egyptian situation is the role of the army. The Americans were terrified of standing armies. They thought they were the tools of tyrants. But in Egypt, it seems this is the one national institution that the protesters seem to have some hope in, and they see it as an instrument of democracy, which is paradoxical to me.
Wow.
You know, let me ask you, Al, one of the things that people are pointing to is that there's no designated person that could step in and replace Mubarak, that the protesters don't have a figurehead to become the new leader. Is it required in a transition to democracy that you have a president ready to go, ready to step in and oversee that transition?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. For two reasons. One, the thing we have to understand is that a huge, glorious civil society resistance movement, such as we've seen in Tunisia and Egypt, can overthrow a dictatorship. It cannot create a new democracy. That needs something we call political society. And the people who are sane, right now there are a number of people, and it's important. It's the 6th of February group. It's some old liberal parties. It's also some of the Muslim Brotherhood. very important. You have the Nobel Prize winner, El Baradei. They say they might get together. They have to do more than that.
Well,
they have to start issuing documents, and they have to create political society and be ready to be an interim government.
But to the last point, I mean, if we talk about 1989, the failed states did not have a Václav Havel or a Lech Wałęsa, places like Romania. I mean, unless there is a charismatic leader that people will follow, there is not an orderly process. And you've also got in 1989 memory of pre-Soviet sort of civic society in Europe. You don't have that here in Egypt.
Yeah, I really think you're going down a dangerous path by saying you need a charismatic leader. What you need is some interim government that very quickly has elections. The elections then create a parliament which writes the constitution and which they can choose. As I said, every single post-communist country that's a democracy now, not one of them is American-style presidential. Every one of them are parliamentary. That's a different choice.
Right. And Sal Stepan, director of the Center for the Study of Democracy at Columbia University. Pauline Mayer, Egypt has a constitution, and if you read it, it talks all about rights for human beings and protecting individual rights and freedom and free elections and the sovereignty of the people. Do they need or want to rewrite a new constitution here?
Well, having or respecting a constitution seem to be two different things. Clearly, people don't think that the constitution has produced what it promises to produce. So whether they want to reinstitute government that honors the constitution or to write another one remains to be seen.
And what is the precedent of when you write the constitution? In the case of the United States, there was a war fought before we even got to the constitution.
Well, no, actually, we were writing constitutions from 1776 on the state level, and they became experimental governments, experimental constitutions that fed into the federal constitution. So this was, in that sense, a very orderly process. And with regard to Al's point, you know, we didn't start out with a presidential system. We started out with much more like a parliamentary
system. That's
right.
That's right. All right. So Pauline and Al, just very, very quickly, are you hopeful looking at what's going on today and this week? Very quickly.
If bad decisions are made, if civil society doesn't produce some political society, that's bad.
Pauline Mayer?
If the military stand by and...
I'm watching the Army.
I'm watching the Army. Al Stepan, director of the Center for the Study of Democracy at Columbia. Pauline Mayer, William R. Kennan, professor of American history at MIT.